Hello world, welcome back to Down the Bunny Hole with me, Julie. Today we're going to be interviewing one of my new friends, Hector C. He is a producer and he does many other wonderful things that he's going to be telling us about. Hey Hector.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Go ahead and tell me about a little bit about yourself, like where you came from and anything that you have to share about your life.
Okay, well, I'm an El Paso native. I've never lived anywhere else but here. At one point, I almost moved to New Jersey, but circumstances had it that I wasn't gonna move. More important things took place at that point, so.
What was in New Jersey?
Just a new life.
You just wanted to change?
Yeah, I wanted a change of people and scenery.
That's nice.
I usually don't talk about this, but my son was the main reason why I didn't move.
Oh, you wanted to be with him?
Yes, he was to be born soon.
Oh.
So I stayed.
You got to be with him and meet him and
be
born. That's so nice.
Yep.
Did you want to tell me like about like your childhood? You said you were playing, since when have you been playing guitar?
I've been playing guitar since I was 2 years old. I'm 43 now. And it's always brought me great amounts of joy. It's just always been this, I guess it's like an extension of me. Basically, the instrument is an extension of me, and when I was in school, I played it between 8 and 12 hours every day, weekends included, so it was just a constant thing.
So it was just your thing, right? Like your main thing,
yeah.
Your hobby, you just loved it?
To this day, I don't consider it a hobby. It's just part of my life, part of me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you said you were playing since you were 2 years old. How did that happen? Did your parents introduce you to the guitar?
No. Well, my dad was always listening to hard rock and I guess some borderline metal music, you know, Van Halen.
Rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen. You will be missed.
Santana, Journey, Foreigner, Kiss. We always listen to that kind of stuff.
The good stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not too aware of what radio station was available back in 79, but whenever we were listening to the radio, those bands would pop up. He played all that type of music, and it stuck with me. The low growl of the guitar always grabbed my ear, and my mom and my dad got with my grandfather and they got me a guitar from Juarez.
Really? So they put money together to get you the guitar?
Yeah. It was a miniature guitar, and I played the hell out of it. I didn't know what I was doing, but I played the hell out of it.
You were experimenting with it for the first time?
Exactly. And on, I think it was 321 Contact, which is an old PBS show, they showed Kiss, and I would pretty much just copy the whole smashing of the guitars on stage.
Yeah, that's so cool.
But I would do it on the couch because I knew if I literally do it, I would be in trouble.
Well, yeah, you're no more guitar for you.
Exactly.
And
so,
you're like, no, my guitar.
Yeah. So, there was a lot of influence going on, and the fact that they went ahead and did that really opened up my love for music in general.
That's That's good. That's good that your parents realized that you love that so much, especially at such an early age, like 2 years old.
Yeah.
Like, how did you even know what you liked at the time, you know? Like, that's crazy.
Well, the cool thing is that my Uncle David, which is my mom's youngest sibling, mm-hmm. he was a teenager when I was a toddler, and I would always see him bring in guitars. I swear he even had like an ML, a Dean ML, which is Dimebag's type, guitar type, like the kind he played all the time.
Yeah.
And I would call it the Star Guitar. And interestingly enough, he wouldn't let me touch those guitars, but he would let me touch his, he would let me play his acoustic. Oh, okay. So what I used to do since I was a little guy, I would put all the pillows behind me, jump on the bed, and just kind of adjust myself.
Oh, that's funny.
And play. And the weird thing is, like, you know, when you're a kid, you can't really finger the notes out because it's a lot of tension. But I did. And
really?
The first song I actually riffed out was Ozzy Osbourne's Diary of a Madman riff.
Wow.
The
Really? At 2 years old?
Yeah, it was weird.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was weird, and it took me a while as I grew up to realize that I was playing that. And that was one of the other artists my dad listened to was Ozzy Osbourne. He actually had the Diary of a Madman cassette tape.
Nice.
And I loved listening to that song in particular.
That's nice. And what else do you do aside from playing guitar?
I've produced bands over the years. Recorded, produced. I still do that. I produce a show called Stepping Out with Joe Dorgan and Bo Vigil.
That's a really good show.
Yeah, and I
love it.
You were on the second you were on both shows actually.
Yeah.
And
I love those guys. They're so awesome.
Yeah. So I do that. There's another gentleman I'm going to be working with. It's just been kind of hard on my end to work out my schedule, but that'll happen for sure.
Yeah, you have a lot of stuff going on with the podcast. And do you still work with bands currently?
I do. I just recently recorded a band called Steel Lake. We just did drums.
Nice.
They're working on the rest, and I'm going to end up mixing and mastering their album. I also do live sound at the Rock House, which pretty much has the only killer live setup in town. So I'm one of the sound engineers there.
I need to go check that out.
Yeah, you need to. I think next week there will be some shows, so I'll let you know.
Ooh, nice. Let me know.
And that's basically all I do. Besides being a father, I do that. I've written songs along the way. I've written a ton of songs, but only certain have really surfaced with bands and band members. So,
what is like your inspiration when you're writing music?
Well, in the past, it used to be just negativity. I used to be a very negative person, and it was so easy to write mean and evil fucking music with that.
The negative stuff just comes out of you like crazy.
But now, when I write a song, and if I write a song that I want to keep, I'm actually more proud of it now because it wasn't based on that. It's actually based on my soul creativity rather than, you know, hating somebody.
Yeah, that's good.
But I can tell you, you know, at this point in my life, it probably wouldn't hurt to, you know, utilize the light and the dark to write a song because the contrast can make for a pretty interesting song, I believe.
Yeah, that does sound pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It would be a good twist.
Mm-hmm.
We are now going to take a short break to tell you about Anchor. Okay, guys, we're back here with Hector. He's going to tell us a little bit about what he does as a music producer and explain to people like me that we're not very musically inclined. So teach me your ways, Hector.
Okay, so at this point in time, I used to take whatever band wanted to record, because I believe everybody should have a chance to record their song, their music, and put it out for people to hear. But just kind of given how sometimes, you know, you give people a break and you get into the project, you're expected to put out quite heavily. And by putting out, I mean, okay, so have you finished the mix? Have you done this? Have you done that? And it becomes a burden, because mixing, when you think of mixing and you think of like your favorite band, it takes months. It could even take a year or years as far as mixing a great album. And
like the whole album, or like just like a few songs?
The whole album. Oh. Even just one song will take a good while. I mean, people have it just depends on how much you invest into the actual recording, mixing, and mastering of the song.
Oh, okay.
You know,
depends how much you want to tweak it.
Exactly. So I guess nowadays the way I handle it is, I want to make sure that the band has their shit together, for lack of a better description.
Yeah.
Meaning they already know their song, they already know their parts. There's no question as to what they have to perform in the studio, because unfortunately time is money.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the band wants to get everything they can out of what they invested. And I need to make a living doing it.
Yeah.
So if you get a band that has their shit together, the recording process is extremely smooth.
And faster.
And a lot faster. So after, you know, miking up all the instruments and recording the band, you know, you get to the mixing, and the mixing can be brutal, because on a local level, bands like to have input as to what they want to hear in their music, in their final product. Instead of relying on the engineer and what he has to offer creatively.
So do you have like the bands fight you about things sometimes?
Oh, it's always.
Always?
It's always been that way. I don't think bands are never happy with what they're given.
Really?
Something could have been a lot more of this or a lot more of that, but they don't realize that frequencies have to be divided within the spectrum to make one sound. It's like, well, I don't hear enough kick, or I don't hear enough, you know, guitar, or I don't hear enough whatever, and it all takes its own space. I mean,
because there has to be like a balance, right? Like everything's working together, so you can't like move one thing without affecting another. Is
exactly
that kind of like what you're talking about?
Yeah, and that's one of the examples would be like the kick drum and the bass guitar.
Oh, right.
Like they can both cover the same frequency space.
Oh.
And or you can move them depending, you know. But something like that definitely would have to, It can work against itself within the mix, and one can muddy up the other.
Yeah.
Or there's just no clarity within both instruments, and you just kind of lose out on the overall
feel and affect and energy of that instrument.
And when the bands get mad because they want to put in their input and stuff, and you try to explain to them, do they still get stubborn about it?
They can. But if they have deadlines, they also have to realize that
they're just like, all right, whatever. Let's do this, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite rare if you come across somebody that's just cool with everything you did.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to think about it sometimes as like a painting, you know? It's like if you're the artist, but they're telling you what colors to use.
Yeah.
And that's kind of difficult.
That's what I was going to say. It's kind of like an ego thing at the same time, too. Like, want your work to have your work, too, you know? Like,
yeah.
Even though, like, you're producing it for them, they want to be able to say, like, I put my input in, you know? Like, I also had something to do with it.
I guess subconsciously. Subconsciously, because, you know, they want their instrument to shine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everything has to balance out in the mix, and then, you know, that's when you have a good sounding recording.
Mm-hmm.
or mix or whatever you know, but yeah. But yeah, like, as far as like producing a band, it helps with the amount of time I've had as a musician. And I not only play guitar, I play drums, I play bass, I sing.
Oh, wow.
And I've had a little bit of dabble in keyboards.
Oh, that's cool.
So the thing is, I, you know, relative pitch is always there. So if I'm listening to, say, the singer is laying down his vocals and I hear him out of key, it's like we stop. And, you know, not everybody is knowledgeable in their instrument. It's just kind of what musicians usually, like rock musicians, metal musicians, usually are about how they feel. It's not necessarily about like the technicality of, oh, I'm playing a G sharp.
Oh, you know? Okay. I know what you mean.
So it's just like I'm playing on the fourth fret and this is what I'm doing here. And it's like, okay. But when you have a producer, that's the magic of having a producer, is that extra ear to tell you, oh, dude, that's kind of weird. It's not working with this.
Yeah.
Your vocal line isn't working with the melody line of the guitar, which isn't working with the harmony of the whole song.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're like the expert. Like, you go all into detail and tell them, like, pretty much break it down for them.
Yeah. Yeah. In the past, it would even get to the point where, like, say the band was kind of, one of the guitar players was not as good as the other guitar player, and I was like, well, can we just copy and paste this? And it's like, we can't do that because we didn't put a click track, and the drummer's not actually on meter. He's off. He's been off the whole time. So we can try and see what'll happen, but I'm not gonna promise you it's gonna work. You know, more than not, it wouldn't work.
Like, it would sound weird.
It just off. Was off. It was off meter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's so many aspects to being a producer that could benefit a band. And you're kind of like that extra band member, if you're allowed to be that, you know?
Do you like hanging out with all these bands and stuff? Like, is that the scene that you like, that you're into?
I used to hang out with all the bands that I recorded. I've become a little bit more reclusive. I've just taken a more calm approach to living. Because I used, you know, when I was a lot younger, I would record a band and, you know, we would get to know each other. And it's like, hey, man, you want to come out and party with us? And it's like, fuck yeah, I'll go out with you. And then next thing you know, we're having a night of debauchery and getting all messed up. And you know, that would make us closer, you know. I made friends that way. I have friends from that era in my life where I was like, yeah, dude, like, we fucking partied till the fucking morning, and we're friends, and you're doing our CD, and that was cool. I mean, I enjoyed. Yeah, I enjoyed those bonds, and I still have bonds with some of the people from back in the day. But ultimately, now, I mean, my health is the first reason why I calmed down, and the second are, well, pretty much my son, my older kids are already older, yeah. But my youngest, I mean, I have to. I want to be there for him, you know. So I can't. It's not like I'm actually driven to even be that way, because I have a. I'm in a tribute band, and when we go out, you know, there's no room to mess around, because the times that it actually happened, I paid for it. Even just one drink will just lay me out and probably make me sick, because I'm on meds. So. I have to be smart about how I live my life.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's true.
And
not only that, but I mean, I feel like after a while it also gets old, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's like so much partying is like too much.
Yeah, I did enough partying for the rest of my life, so I'm pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah.
At least you can say that you can cross that off your bucket list.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I don't really have a bucket. I mean, people like to live that way. I mean, I'm more spontaneous. Whatever happens at that moment happens, and you know, but
yeah, that's actually what I've been doing too.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, because I used to plan everything, but it was annoying to plan things. They would never happen. Like, life doesn't care about your plans. You could be like, oh, I'm going this place tomorrow, and life would be like, no, you're not, bitch.
That's true. That could happen. You can get a flat tire and not end up going to where you wanted to go, yeah, to begin with. So, yeah.
It's funny because I also have this friend, and it's funny because she's always making plans, and she's always canceling them.
Well, there you go.
So, that's another reason.
Yeah. Yeah, you have yourself to count on only.
Yep.
Very true.
So, right now, where do you have your like your music, and where do you distribute your work?
Like my personal music?
Yeah.
Well, I have a band called Here After the Wave. We've pretty much been on a hiatus because we lost our drummer. And it's just been, really relaxed. I haven't really worried about it, especially with, once the lockdown occurred, it was just kind of like a
break.
It was a huge damper at first, and then it was a great break, because I was away from the busy life of doing sound a lot, and seeing people that I'm used to seeing in the scene. And not all of them are great people. There's some close friends, and then there's some people that just I didn't want to be around. Yeah, and it gave me a break from those people. So
that's good.
So yeah, unfortunately, not everybody was on the same page as far as rehearsing and all that kind of stuff. So we even did away with our practice space. So
really?
Yeah, so there's no practice space. Still.
Are you guys like looking for a drummer?
At this moment I really don't care.
You're fine like the way everything is.
I'm fine the way life is moving right now.
That's good.
There's just more important things, you know. Relationships with people have been the focus during this whole time for me, and I don't really feel like the musical relationships are that important. See, like, the bands that I've created in the past and currently were always based around friends, you know. I never really became a bandmate
with strangers.
Yeah, it was always with friends.
Is that how it usually is for bands, or is it always strangers?
I think it's both. It can be both. Mm. And I know it can be both because when in the back in the day when my studio was running full steam ahead, I would hook up musicians with bands. Like, say somebody's like, "Hey man, do you know of a bass player?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know the perfect guy." And I call that dude and see if he was cool or free. And next thing I'm like, "Here, I give him your number. He's gonna call you."
That's awesome.
So that's
like,
how
I just got a job thanks to you.
Yeah, and that's how it would work back in the day. It's part of the networking when you're in the band.
Yeah, networking is very important when you're in a band.
It is. It definitely is, and so is the higher level of networking, which would involve one of the biggest things that a musician could probably invest in, especially once we get back to I'm not gonna say normal, but being out and about,
like after COVID.
Yeah, it would be the NAMM show, which is the National Association for Musical Merchants. And it's basically all the major and minor brands in the music industry. You know, I'm not going to mention names because I'm not promoting any of them. But, you know, we all play guitars and they have names on the headstocks.
Yeah.
We all play amps and there's names on the cabs and the head. Mm-hmm. So, a group of my friends and I would always go and attend those. And you definitely want to network there.
Yeah, get to know people.
Get to know people. One thing I never did but should have was actually have a business card, music, and even a resume or some form of an EPK to hand out to a manufacturer that you're interested in hopefully being endorsed by or even just working with and like, you know, hey, I'd like to demo your amp or your guitar or whatever you've got, you know?
Nice.
And networking there is a big thing because you never know. I mean, you could meet, I don't want to use the word star, but you could meet an important artist there that may be looking for
somebody,
a musician in their band, and you're that person.
Yeah, it could be your lucky day.
It could. So networking at that level is where you really want to be.
Yeah.
Because at the local level, I mean, it works. I mean, yeah, if you're a good musician and you're performing and everybody notices, you're going to get noticed. And people are going to want to jam with you or they're going to want to introduce you to a friend's band that's missing you.
Yeah, because if you're good, people are going to want to get you out there, you know? They're going to be proud of you.
Yeah, so that's, to me, that's like the highest level of networking in town because I don't think the radio stations here in town can do anything for the musicians here.
Why is that?
Self-interest, I would say. Mm. I would definitely say that. And again, I'm not saying names, but I'm sure people that'll be listening will know who I'm talking about, what entity I'm talking about, and, you know.
Well, that entity sucks then. I'm just kidding.
they probably do. So, although I do know some good people that are there, there are others that aren't quite as good. So, but yeah.
There's always those bad apples.
Yeah. And it's like I said, it's like there's a lot of self-interest with the way they work. So I don't, so I'm saying like, if you really, there was always talk about being out, touring and, getting your name out that way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can do that. But I mean, touring,
it takes a lot of money, no?
Hell yeah. It takes a lot of money, a lot of money. And you know, don't be disillusioned with the whole thing of like, yeah, we can make merch and it'll sell, we'll sell it all. Because I've seen badass bands that are national acts try to sell their shit here in El Paso.
And they still don't sell
out. And they don't sell out.
Wow.
Or what they turned out wasn't as high as they thought they would. And it's just, you know, people would rather drink than buy a shirt. People would rather drink
That's
than
true.
Fucking,
it's El Paso.
People would rather drink than fucking pay $5 to see the local bands play. I mean, well, it's... that $5 is for my beer. It's like, come on, fool. Like, you've got...
Like you could have an experience and you just chose to just get a beer.
Exactly. Well, a number of beers, because they always make it seem like they're just going to drink one beer, that they only have that $5 for one beer, but it's... Those people usually end up drinking a lot, and...
They're the ones throwing up on the floor. Just
kidding. Probably. Probably. Yeah, so... Yeah, networking on that higher level is quite important. You do have to become a member of NAMM, so there are fees and whatnot. But if you can be lucky enough to make a connection before that, which I was lucky enough to, because of one of my friends named David O. Mm-hmm. We had hooked up with a guitar manufacturer a few years back, and I became a demonstrator for the guy. Nice. And that's how we were going to NAMM. So, yeah, that's... If you're lucky enough to do that, or just become a member.
That's cool.
Yeah. So.
And, touring, how was that for you?
Touring is a pretty... It's not like how everybody thinks, like, oh yeah, you're gonna go out and experience, you know, the scenery and chicks and partying.
So it's not like in the movies?
No, it's definitely not. I mean, even the big bands can tell you and have been on camera showing you that they're just backstage on their fucking computer.
They're all bored.
either doing business while they're backstage kicking back, or they're talking to family members.
Yeah.
Or they're just enjoying their time before they go out, because you still need a little bit of me time when you're out on the road.
That's true.
Because
you're like surrounded by people all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, you're surrounded by your bandmates. If you have a crew, which most local bands won't have a crew. They're lucky if they have one friend that's willing to drive the whole way and take all their equipment out and all that kind of stuff. But usually you're not that lucky, and you're the roadie, you're the driver, and you're the bandmate. So
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. You can't bitch about it. You just have to do it. If you're bitching about it, then you're not fucking... You weren't made for it.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I mean, setting up was a pain. You know, because sometimes you do deal with stage managers from either the venue or a band you're opening up for. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you straight up, like, you're not setting up yet. And when you do, you only have 10 minutes to
really?
Set up. Yeah. So you have to have your shit down.
Yeah.
You have to actually know that when you're getting on stage, you're not going to be saying hi to everybody that's on the fucking floor. You have to get on stage, set your shit up, tune up, or be tuned up before you even go on, actually.
Yeah.
And just be ready to sound check. Actually, it's not really a sound check. It's just line checking. And once you do the line check, they basically just run you. When it's your time to play, it's your time to play, and that's it.
That's crazy. I didn't know that that's how it was. Like, they rush you guys?
You can be rushed. I mean, the trick is to anticipate all that.
Yeah. You gotta be prepared. I mean, you've been doing this for a while, so you already know what to expect. You already know what chords you need. You already know where everything goes, you know?
Yeah, you need to make sure that you have all your stuff ready before you even pack it up in the van, because... If you're packing the van and you get to the venue and you're missing stuff, well, you weren't being responsible for yourself.
Yep. So, that just, like, messed up the show.
Yeah. Like, I remember being on the road with one of my old bands. I was in a punk band called Blacklist back in the day. And we opened up for a band called Smile Empty Soul. And they were a pretty big deal back in that, during that time. I think that was like 2004, 2005. I think maybe earlier, I can't remember right now, but when we showed up to Albuquerque to play the Sunshine Theater, and it was freezing. Like, it went from being El Paso warmish, coolish weather to outright freezing.
Really? Was it like snowing and everything?
There was ice actually.
Oh, wow.
When we pulled in, and where they had all the bands hanging out was freezing. So
that sucks.
Yeah, so like before we went on, I always had two main guitars and then two backups, because we used two different tunings, right? Mm-hmm. So I pull out all my guitars and they're all out of whack because of the dryness.
Oh.
So, you know, the wood moves, right? And luckily the guitars are designed with a truss rod, so I had to adjust all my stuff. And the thing is, I showed up with my tools. Mm-hmm. So I set up my guitar. I left my guitars for like about 10 minutes, came back, set them all up. When we got on stage, the stage was warm, so they still moved a little bit more, but not against me. They were in my favor still, luckily.
That's good.
And we played and then we got off. And some of the other bands that were local didn't realize that their shit was going to do the same thing. So they were playing with guitars whose, you know, the action on the guitars were all low and you can hear buzzing.
They weren't ready.
Dead frets. And they weren't ready. And you know, and they were like, what the fuck happened to my shit? And it's like, even though you live here, you still have to adjust. You know, you have to leave your gear out, let it adjust to the environment, and then check it and see. So
that's why, like, that's why I think it's crazy that they sometimes rush you, because, like, how, like, let's say you have a situation like that, like, how do they expect you guys to just, like, fix it right away, you know?
Well, they're assuming that you've done it before. And if that assumption is correct and you have, well, you have your bases covered.
And what happened to that band that wasn't ready?
I honestly don't know. I wasn't even on stage. I was backstage warming up, because my hands were frozen, so I had to warm up and make sure that I was going to be able to play my parts.
Yeah.
I mean, the stage was warm. It was actually really hot. They had the heater up. So luckily for me, as I played the first song, my hands warmed up. But I was backstage warming up, and I had no issues. You know, I had a professional mentality as a musician. So it was always like, okay, so we're gonna get there at this time. We're gonna fucking set our shit up, or be semi set up. So when they call us, we drag everything out there and we just start stacking stuff, instead of like, well, I need to get this, and
yeah,
you have to run back out to the van. And it's like, no, like, you have to have your stuff.
Yeah, because then it's chaos.
It is. And see, like, this past year, having seen national touring acts and the way they tour, mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are bringing out huge, huge cases. And they have guitars in those cases. They have their own mixing systems in those cases. They have they have all their shit, like everything, right?
Yeah.
But it's a lot of equipment. And so, you know, we get the itinerary and it's like, okay, so you got to be there to do sound at 11, or to do a load-in at 11. It's like, okay, so show up at 11, and the band's showing up at 11. And you know, you open the doors and they're pulling all, and this is usually, it's the main band that's showing up at that time, mm-hmm. the headliner. So you'll see them and they're just taking out all their equipment, and then one by one the bands start coming in, and they have to wait for the headliner to unload their stuff, mm-hmm. and once they take their cases back out or wherever they place them, the next band starts
setting up
and well, pulling out their stuff, and because usually it's the main band still setting up on stage. They're still putting their shit together.
That's how much stuff they have.
Yeah, because they end up setting up and leaving their stuff set up.
Oh, okay.
And all the support acts are still waiting to get on stage. Because some of them will leave their stuff on, and others will remove their gear and wait till they play. So it's, there's time constraints, and it's because they have a tour manager for the whole tour package, and they're telling you, like, okay, so this band's at this time, this band's at this time.
So they already have a schedule set up?
There's a total, yeah, there's a complete schedule.
And it's, like, really, like, to the dot.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be, because, there's instances where, like, the poor dudes will have, like, a breakdown and be like, hey, man, like, our bus broke down, we'll be there hopefully in the next hour. Uh-huh. And if they're not there at that time, they'll call you, and they'll be calling the venue owner or manager and be telling them, like, hey, we're still broken down, but these dudes are already on their way and they're gonna set up. And, you know, you start sound checking those dudes, maybe. Yeah. It all depends, because they also, you know, communicate amongst themselves, and we'll be like, no, like, don't do a sound check yet. We're going to show up in the next hour. And I remember having, I don't remember what band it was, but I remember having a headliner showing up like 5 hours late.
Oh my gosh.
And they were discussing if the other band should start sound checking. Mm-hmm. So at that point it was like, yeah, we're just going to sound check. That way we're ready. So when they pull up, they're good to go, and they...
Yeah.
You know, they set their stuff up, then they get their sound check done, and then everybody's ready.
Yeah, because 5 hours is, like, too much time to just waste, you know?
Yeah.
Like, somebody should do something.
Yeah. So, but it's not always like that. Sometimes...
they make you guys wait the 5 hours.
They'll make the whole touring package wait, because, you know, they may have, like, a really extensive setup. And if you... Their setup might be part of the band right before them, so then definitely we have to wait, you know. Yeah. And because of where bands will set up on the stage, sound can change, you know, and timing, and there's a bunch of stuff involved with.
Yeah, like, do you have to, like, pay attention to, like, where the walls are at and all that stuff, like,
Of
the echoes, or none of that stuff matters?
It does matter. It just kind of depends on the sound guy and how technical he's going to be about the timing of, you know, that amp and this mic and that wall and the monitor and the front
echo
of house. Yeah. Yeah, because you can actually, like, time delay things so that everything... It's
That's
coming
crazy.
Out correctly. Yeah.
It's crazy how you can, like, adjust all that stuff.
I honestly don't know any of that shit. when I do sound, it's just raw, and I just go out with it, you know.
That's
but
cool.
But I've seen guys get real technical and, you know, ask me, like, do you know how far this speaker is from that monitor? And I'll be like, I don't know. I've seen them, like, measure shit out.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, engineering it and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they actually do the math to
they're
actually figure out.
They're super smart.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I wonder if they went to, like, school for that. Or if they just, like, they're really good at math and estimating.
Well, I'm sure they read up. If they didn't go to school, I'm sure they've read or have worked under somebody that knew that kind of stuff. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Definitely, they've been schooled on it.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Yeah, because that's crazy. I mean, angles and, you know?
Yeah.
Sound.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. Do you have any fun stories or anything that you would like to share?
I have a lot of stories. I have probably too many.
Pick your favorite one. The one that you think about the most, that's the most memorable.
I think one of the most memorable memories I had... memorable memories. sounded dumb. I think one of the most memorable things I've been involved in was when my band, 5393, played the White Rabbit in San Antonio.
Oh, wow.
That was probably the most intense show I've ever been in.
What were you playing at that time? Is that the show?
I've always played guitar in my bands. I've joined other bands before where I've played bass or sang for.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's been my band, it's always guitar.
You're really good.
Well, thank you.
Really, really good.
Thank you.
Like, you blew my mind.
I
remember I was all drinking my White Claw, all relaxing, and then you started with your guitar, and I was just like, I felt like I was in another dimension.
Well, damn.
I was like, I needed that.
It's because I guess my guitar has psilocybin in it.
It does, huh? I felt it.
Yeah, no, this show was amazing. It was, our bass player had become really good friends with the promoter. I believe his name was Mike. I don't remember his last name. I don't know if it was Sanchez or whatever, but it was his birthday show, and he invited us to play.
Cool.
And the funny thing is that there were a lot of San Antonio locals, but we were probably one of the only bands that wasn't a local. And we were playing on the main stage instead of like one of the little stages that they had set up, because they had, I think, one or two side stages that were in other parts of the building, which I didn't know of. And so we got invited. Mistress Julia, who used to be part of Fuse, I think it was Fuse, was going to be the MC for the night, for the show.
Yeah.
And she even introduced us. There's actually footage on YouTube.
Really?
Of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, she actually introduces us. And
like, what would I search for to find it?
5393 live in San Antonio, I believe.
Cool. I'm going to look for it.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, she was excited to introduce us, because we actually ended up fucking playing before she was done introducing us, and you can just tell when she was talking that she was all revved up.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we were really unexpected to be playing the main stage, as well as to be such a hard-hitting package, because we weren't locals and we were unknown. But
you were like the newbies there?
Newbies. And as soon as we started playing, like, we ended up packing the house.
Everybody's like, whoa.
Yeah. It was so funny because our singer, his cousin was from there. But anyway, like, his cousin was in the crowd and he was like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna videotape you guys. It's gonna be awesome and it won't be a problem. And no, it was a huge problem because none of us nor he expected the crowd to come in. So as soon as we started playing, fucking
mosh pit
broke out, and you could just see the camera boom, like he got thrown.
Oh, really?
He got thrown to the ground, and then he stood up and kept videotaping, because it was actual videotape. Yeah.
He's like, this is too good, I can't stop.
Yeah, and it was actual videotape because it was 8mm. Back
That's
then.
Crazy.
Yeah, so we played, I think, like a 5-song set, something like that, and we got off and we blew the fucking doors out of that place.
That's awesome.
To the point where, like, Julia came out, she saw me in the crowd, she came out, she's like, what the fuck was up with you guys? And I was like,
where did you come from?
Yeah, and I told her we're from El Paso, we got invited to play this dude's party. He's buddies with our bass player, because that's right, that's what I was trying to get at, is that our bass player was making flyers for this guy, because at that time he didn't have a job, and he ended up making a small business of making flyers for out of town dudes, because they would see his flyers on MySpace back in the day, and they're like, dude, that shit's sick. So that's what he was always doing.
Cool.
So that's how we got that gig, and
it was amazing.
It was. We killed it. And
what did you feel when you were up on stage? Like, what do you feel?
It's the thing I always feel, actually. It's a rush. It's
exhilarating.
It's exhilarating. Like, you... Like, I'm one person on the floor watching bands or doing sound, right? But when I'm up on stage...
You're
like,
a rock star.
that's what they say. I immerse myself in what I do.
That's good. That's how it should be.
So it's like a Jekyll Hyde kind of effect, you know?
Cool.
And, you know, I let the music take me, and of course I'm driving, so I have control of it, but as far as the feeling, I just let the music do what it does, and I get lost, and then when it's done, I'm like, fuck, I want more, you know?
Yeah.
And it's always that way. It's like, man, that was 30 minutes. Like, felt like 5.
Really?
Yeah, it feels, if time...
It goes by fast?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's real quick. Unless there's, like, some sort of hold up with the set list where it's like, well, what song are we doing? Or no one has the fucking set list. That shit's annoying. And that's,
setbacks.
And that's usually what's taken place, like, over time. Where somebody says they're gonna make the set list, and then we get there and it's like, oh, I didn't make it. It's
they
like,
forgot.
Well, fuck. So it's like calling out songs, and that just gets old. But when things are flowing and everything's smooth and we have a set list and everybody's on the same page, it's just
perfect.
Yeah, it's a whole, it's a trip. It's a beautiful trip. It's a unique thing to be a musician.
I'm jealous. I'm very, very jealous right now.
You should be.
I'm so jealous. I wish I could experience that.
Well, I mean, what musical instrument are you drawn to?
Well, I actually like the guitar. Mm-hmm. And I like the drums too, but I like the guitar more.
Pick it up.
I've tried it.
It's never too late.
I've tried it, but I need to practice more.
Yeah. I'm sure you can find some time.
I also thought like about singing, but like, you know how I was telling you, like, I've always been self-conscious about my voice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I never really tried it.
Well, the trick to that, because when I first was thinking of singing,
mm-hmm.
I don't like my speaking voice. I still don't. But it's the only one I have. So
we can't change it.
No. And my singing voice, I have different singing voices.
That changes?
Yeah, I sound totally different from how I speak. So what you have to do is just record yourself.
And just practice and practice.
Yeah, sing to a song that you know, or write a song. Like, if once you learn how to play guitar, and write a song and sing to it. But I would say sing... You know, pick a song you like, sing to it, and see how you sound. And if you don't like what you hear, then work with it, watch singing videos. I actually, since I don't have a vocal teacher anymore, I watch this guy on YouTube, and I will say his name is Jeff Rolka.
Oh,
and
nice.
he's an awesome singing teacher.
I will definitely check that out.
Yeah, because he covers all the vocal ranges. Sorry, you're probably gonna have to cut this shit.
No, not at all.
So yeah, like you watch those type of videos, vocalize, you know, look at like a basic singing video and vocalize with it, and it'll show you how to sing, how to position yourself, how to breathe, and see if you like your voice then, you know?
Nice, I'm gonna try that out.
It'll definitely work. I know that, because I've always vocalized on my own when I was singing heavily.
Mm-hmm.
So Because you have to. If you don't warm up, you'll fuck up your voice. And at one point, I ended up messing up my voice because I drank too much and I no longer was warming up. I was just going in thinking that I was Superman, which I'm not. So,
it's kind of like stretching your muscles, but for your voice.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because you still have to. There's actually like face stretching exercises. So that,
I heard about those.
So you stretch your facial muscles when you sing. But just give it a try that way. And if you like what you hear when you record, or if you're like not too bothered, I mean, if you're hard on yourself with other things, you'll be hard on yourself with that, and you'll know if you like your voice or not.
Yeah, but that's how you improve too. That's how you get better.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to try that next. That's going to be my next hobby.
There you go.
So, did we already go over, like, your pages and stuff?
No. No, we didn't.
I don't know if you want to let the audience know, like, where they can get a glimpse of your work.
Yeah. So, I have a number of things that I do musically, band-wise. I have the Pantera tribute called 333. And so I have a YouTube channel. I don't really have much on there. I've been trying to figure out how to build a video, like videos for that. I've got some videos, like three videos, because I deleted some from there that I didn't really like. They were kind of pointless, but one shows me doing solos for the 333 Pantera tribute.
Is that the one you were telling me about? Or
yeah, that's one thing. That's one thing I was telling you about. I also shows a video for a song called The Art of Shredding. And then there's also another video for the band Death and a cover we did of theirs called Lack of Comprehension. And then I have my Instagram page, which is the_Hector_C_333. So it's TheHectorC333, and that's my personal Instagram page. And then there's the other Instagram that we have, or that the Pantera tribute has, is 333TX_Pantera_tribute, which would be 333TexasPanteraTribute. Nice. You can see a bunch of stuff there. I don't have a Facebook that anybody can really see. It's private. But that's pretty much about it as far as anything that you could see of mine. There's Here After the Wave.
What about your podcast?
The podcast is Stepping Out 101. It should say that on Mixcloud, and then you can also catch that on Mad Wasp Radio.
Awesome. Make sure to check that out, guys. They're really funny.
We're a couple of jackasses just loving music.
Yep. You get to listen to them talk about crazy funny things, and you get to listen to really good music that they picked out for you guys.
Yeah. I think Joe and Bo actually pick out the best music. I'm just kind of like...
You're a good host, too.
Well, I try. Lately, I've been trying
harder.
Especially
your heavy metal voices.
Oh, God.
Those are hilarious. Can you do one?
No, not now.
Come on.
I'm all hoarse now.
That Jack Daniels didn't help?
No, not at all. I took the Jack Daniels for my allergies, but it ended up making me more hoarse, apparently. So, but yeah, I think those are the more important social media that you could look at.
Awesome.
That involve me. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, this was Hector C.
Yes.
And thank you so much for being on my podcast. It was so much fun. And thank you for letting me be on your podcast.
Oh, no, you're welcome.
That was so cool.
It was. It was, actually. But yeah, no, thank you, Julie. Thank you for having me.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. And you guys have a good night. See ya. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again. I appreciate every listen. Please support the show by subscribing or following me on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite platforms.